From the studios of KPCW in Park City, it's This Green Earth, a weekly talk show about the environment and our relationship with it. I'm Nell Larson.
And I'm Chris Cherniak. Thanks for tuning in.
We have a couple of guests joining us. Ella Sorensen, the manager of the Gilmore Sanctuary on the Great Salt Lake, is joining us, as well as Don Paul, who's a biologist with the Utah Division of Wildlife Resources. Don, thanks for joining us.
You're welcome.
So we're excited to hear, of course, that Governor Cox declared 2021 the year of the shorebird at Great Salt Lake and in Utah, and also the year of the Western Hemisphere Shorebird Reserve site at the Great Salt Lake. That's a little bit of a mouthful. Explain to us what these declarations mean and kind of where they came from.
Sure. The Western Hemisphere, it is a tough word. The Western Hemisphere Shorebird Reserve Network has been around since about 1985, and it was an initiative to link important shorebird sites along the flyways during the fall and spring migrations. The program came about mostly because shorebirds, many of the shorebirds nest in the Arctic and subarctic of Canada and Alaska. And they nest in a really broad sweep across that landscape. But when they migrate, they concentrate in key areas. So Great Salt Lake happens to be one of those. So they kind of explode when they go to the breeding grounds coming north, and they kind of implode when they're going south, using these really rich aquatic resources to molt and gain weight for their further migration. So protecting those sites was the concept for the Western Hemisphere Shorebird Reserve Network.
And Salt Lake, it is one of these places that has sort of this hemispheric significance for these migrating species, right?
That is true. So in the, I'll use the acronym, in the WHISHRN, which stands for the Western Hemisphere Shorebird Reserve Network, that's the acronym, system, you can qualify based on certain levels of populations of shorebirds you have, or how significant you might be for a particular species. The Great Salt Lake, there are three categories. The highest one is a hemispheric reserve, which means you have to exceed in a migratory season 500,000, a half a million shorebirds in transit, or a third of what would be the life history extent of a particular species. The number of birds that represent that species has to be at least a third of that population. And the Great Salt Lake qualified on both of those with just one shorebird, but it could have done with many others. So it is really, truly an important site for migratory shorebirds, especially those that come off the west side of North America and travel down into to South America.
How many different species of birds are we talking about that visit the lake?
Yeah, in Utah, we have documented 42 species of shorebirds that have occurred on Great Salt Lake. They vary widely from the 18-inch long-billed curlew to the snowy plover, which is about the size of a medium-sized chicken egg.
I like that visual. Thank you, Ella. We know that there are 10 million migratory birds annually that come through. It's hard to even imagine that. What are some of the species that we see that are most prevalent in this migration through the Great Salt Lake?
Avocets, which is a medium-sized shorebird with long legs and an upturned bill. It has a bright orange head and black and white bold body. That's one of the most prevalent shorebirds. The Wilson's foul rope, which is a tiny shorebird, comes on Great Salt Lake, and that's the one that Don was talking about. Hundreds of thousands of them pass through Great Salt Lake. That is two examples of shorebirds.
And these shorebirds come to the lake and sort of replenish their fuels. They increase their weight. Some of these, like, double in size, right?
Yeah, let me paint a visual of what Dawn has said and what you just referred to. I often think if a light were lit where every single shorebird was nesting, then this area that Dawn explained of Western Canada and actually part of Western Northern United States would glitter like stars in a night sky. After they nest, they funnel to Great Salt Lake like grains in a giant hourglass. Here, they feed on the enormous number of macroinvertebrates like brine flies, midges. They double their weight before flying, dispersing once again to nest all the way from southern Utah to the tip of southern South America. And often these flights are literally thousands of nonstop miles.
Ella, take a minute to tell us about your preserve and, you know, why it was designated as a preserve.
Yes, National Audubon began in the mid-1990s. We began with a 100-acre land donation. We have since then had 18 land and water transactions. We're now up to almost 4,000 acres, and we manage specifically for shorebirds. What does that mean? That means that our water is shallow, between 0 and 7 inches, and we are literally insect farmers, where we go out and do life cycles of the insects, because that's what these shorebirds need to fuel for these long flight migrations.
And is there public access to this preserve, or is it set aside specifically for the birds?
Yes, we have a portion called the Lake Creek Natural Area that is open to the public. It's about 2 miles east of Saltaire. The main part of Gilmore Sanctuary, we do not have a legal access for the public, but we do occasionally take people and individuals out to tour on our site. It's an absolutely incredible site. Just yesterday, I had almost 10,000 redneck foul ropes spinning around in the water like vortexes, just covering as far as the eye could see. So it's a very, very special place for shorebirds.
I've got a toss-up question from a young listener who wants to know, basically, how much time does, say, the typical bird spend at the lake, and do they come back in the fall?
That's an excellent, excellent question. In the springtime, they're kind of in a hurry to get up to their nesting, so they'll spend 3, 4, 5 days. In the fall, it is more protracted. The Wilson's foul rope will arrive sometime in June, the majority of them, after nesting, and they'll linger longer in the fall for these lengthy. And maybe Dawn could add something to that.
Well, I think the important thing to consider is that these birds have different reasons for coming to the lake. Well, there are not a lot of different reasons, but there are different reasons. Some come to molt their feathers. Birds do that. Feathers wear out, kind of like skin on a human being. And then they will take some time to do that. And then they will, the other function obviously is to put on subcutaneous fat to fuel these marathon flights that we're talking about. So some birds will spend in the fall 30 days or so here. Others are just transitory. They don't stay as long. In fact, the turnover is really significant in the springtime. But quite often you'll see it more stable in the fall where you can depend on the birds being around a longer time.
And what's the most unusual species you've seen?
Well, you know, shorebirds of these 42 different species I talked about, they range all the way from abundant to some species which there may be like one record. Like there are species that breed in the eastern hemisphere, and like the ruffs. Occasionally one will get lost and end up on the Great Salt Lake, which is really exciting. So there's probably 5-6 what we call accidental species, which are totally out of their normal range. And, you know, there's maybe 1, 2, 3, 4 records of these species.
You know, I'm getting a little off topic by asking you this, but it's something that, you know, I've heard about many times, and recently had a friend ask me about. And this is a lone flamingo that had taken up residence on the Great Salt Lake. Is this something you guys can tell us about?
Yes. Pink Floyd. Pink Floyd escaped from Tracy Aviary and went out and was eating brine shrimp. And he actually would go out by Saltaire, and then in a migratory thing, he would disappear seasonally, show up for about 7 years. They tried to catch him. They couldn't. But he was very entertaining. But again, when you introduce exotics into a single flamingo is fine for entertainment. But, you know, talks of bringing in and starting colonies would devastate the Great Salt Lake ecosystem.
Absolutely. Okay. For any listeners who are just joining us, we are talking about Governor Spencer Cox's declaration of 2021 as the year of the shorebird here in Utah. And we're speaking with Ella Sorensen, the manager of the Gilmore Sanctuary on the Great Salt Lake, and Don Paul, a biologist with the Utah Division of Wildlife Resources, about the importance of the lake system for these birds. You know, I'm curious to learn a little bit more about what this year of the shorebird will entail. What can we expect to see this year as part of this celebration?
Well, I'll just say one thing. It kicked off just this last week. The Great Salt Lake is a special place to visit for tourists, and so we just have the Great Salt Lake Bird Festival, and that was interesting to do with this COVID year, but they were able to do part of it virtually, and then they practiced, the social distancing and whatever was required on field trips, and that's the kickoff. And I have not been involved as much with what's going to be happening down the road. Ella Upshore can probably talk to that point more fully.
I think, we want to raise awareness of shorebirds. They've kind of been the overlooked species on lake. There's been a lot of focus on waterfowl and ducks, but the shorebirds with millions going through Great Salt Lake, I like to think of it as a hemispheric drama. And year after year, the Actors Act and the play goes on in spite of, in Utah, near empty seats. We have this phenomenal, spectacular drama going on, and our emphasis will be in the future of bringing that spectacular to more people, educating them. All one has to do is stand out on Great Salt Lake and watch thousands of foul ropes rise up off the water like a giant amoeba, flashing white and then black and churning. It's just so poetic and so spectacular that as we move forward, we want to bring people in and let Utah on this front row seat fill in those seats and watch this magnificent drama.
Well, let's spend a few minutes then talking about some of the threats to this, to the birds and to this ecosystem. The first one that pops in my mind is the drought. What do you see? The two of you see as some of the major threats to the health and welfare of this system?
Well, I think that getting water to the Great Salt Lake is absolutely critical. The drought, we have felt the drought on Gilmore Sanctuary. I usually fill my ponds up in winter and let them overwinter for spring migration. With the drought this year, they went totally, completely dry. Development is another issue. Going closer and closer to the lake, taking up habitat, disturbances, water quality. There are many, many threats, against the Great Salt Lake. I could go on, but it would take me 3 days. Just leave it at those two.
We'll have to do another interview where we talk a little bit maybe more about the Great Salt Lake itself and focus on how we can get involved.
Right.
That would be awesome. And I'd also like to, at this point, thank Spencer Cox for signing this declaration for the year of the Shorebirds. We really appreciate that. And for you and your radio station for allowing us to come on and talk about our passion.
Well, you know, I'm glad you brought up Governor Cox. How did this declaration come about? Is this something that you presented to him as a possibility for this year?
I am in the room with Max Malmquist, who was very instrumental, and although he's reluctant, I'm going to turn this over to Max to explain how this all happened.
All right, hey, Max, are you there?
I'm here. Because it is the 30-year anniversary of the Western Hemispheric Shorebird Reserve Network site at Great Salt Lake, a number of partners here in Utah, the Nature Conservancy, Friends of Great Salt Lake, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, of course, the state, Division of Wildlife Resources, and a number of other partners. We really thought that this would be a great special year to have this declaration. So we worked over the last few months to put together a formal request for this declaration.
Fantastic. And now that the declaration has been made and it's sort of been kicked off with the Great Salt Lake Bird Festival, will there be other opportunities to sort of engage with the Year of the Shorebird?
Well, I think one of the programs that will be forthcoming, it'll be a year from now, will be there's a group called the Friends of the Great Salt Lake. That's been really active in conservation and advocacy and in education, and they have every other year they have a forum called the Great Salt Lake Issues Forum, and I know in that forum they're going to be inviting to come the executive director of the Western Hemisphere Shorebird Reserve Network, Rob Clay, who actually lives in Paraguay, and another biologist that's been working with phalaropes in Argentina, in a lake called Laguna Marchiquita. And she will probably be here as well. So there's that going on. And then there's also an initiative to bring salt lakes together, closer together, and what they do and their coordination in dealing with shorebird biology. So that'll be ongoing through the year as well. That's more of a science managed based one, but the forum would be an excellent place for people to get into more depth of the topics we're talking about, issues and biology and the importance of the lake to shorebirds.
We have to wrap up. Ella Sorensen is the manager of the Gilmore Sanctuary on Great Salt Lake, and Don Paul is a biologist with the Utah Division of Wildlife Resources. Last mention, what's a good website for people to go to learn more about this declaration? Anybody?
And then, Don, why don't you kick us off, and then we'll go to Ella.
I guess the best website what I'm thinking right now is if people will simply Google Great Salt Lake Waterbird Survey, they can learn a lot about the birds that through a 5-year study that was done and that should come up, and that's through the Division of Wildlife Resources.
Fantastic.
I don't know the website name, but that's how you'd get it.
Okay. And just, that's the
best way. Just as a disclaimer, just shortly as a disclaimer, I'm a retired biologist from the Division of Wildlife Resources. There are some excellent biologists that are still working directly on the lake. I'm kind of here because I was there when the original Western site was designated and 30 years ago.
Fantastic. Well, thanks so much for that clarification, Don. And then Ella, where can people learn more about the sanctuary?
This is Max again.
Hey, Max. Yeah, just
we only
say,
have 30 seconds. Yeah. Sorry.
I'll make it really quick. So check out the Wisern website. That's WHSRN.org and Great Salt Lake. You can just search that in Google. And then if you want to learn more about the Gilmore Sanctuary, just Google Audubon Rockies Gilmore. And you'll find their homepage.
Fantastic.
Max, Ella, Don, thank you so much for joining us this morning on This Green Earth.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of This Green Earth.
And if you did, we hope you'll take a minute to rate us, share us, and leave a comment.
You can email us your thoughts and ideas for future shows at thisgreenearth@kpcw.org.
Join us next week on This Green Earth.